You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
So as we continue this series, I Am MC3, we're looking, as Brian shared earlier, at our core values as a church. And I've said this every week, but if this is your first time here, if you're a guest, our core values are basically like the guardrails on the road. They're to kind of keep us focused on what we do and why we do it, and so that we can do it well. As a church, we have a C3 process. MC3 is short for Mifflin County Community Church, but it's also what we do and how we do church. And that's C1 is community. And we have prime groups or small groups for that. And if you're not in a prime group, I encourage you to be a part of one. We have 8 of them that meet throughout the week, different locations, different times. You can check that out at the info table. There's a little binder there. Then C2, we feel, is that it's important for a church to be gathered in congregation. Congregation, gathering together, gathering to worship and to learn and to be encouraged. And that's what this is, the worship experience, so that you can be a part of C2. And then the third thing that we see, and by the way, this is all based on Acts chapter 2, where we look at the early church and how it started and what the early church did in the Bible. The third C is caring. C3 is caring, and it's important for the church to care for one another. And so we have what we call C3 opportunities, where they're kind of all over the place. There's no rule. There's no pattern. It's if there's a need, we're going to meet it and at least try to. And so that's kind of what we do as a church. And so it's those three things that guide everything we do. We don't do extra stuff. And if you weren't here last week, you can go online to mc3church.org and listen to The Point and listen to last week's about simple. It's called I Am Simple, and we are simple. We don't do extra things because we want to do the few things that we do and do them well. And so there's a lot of extra things we don't do. And then this week, what we're going to talk about is kind of this whole process, this C3 process is what we do. It's the vehicle on the road, and the core values are kind of the guardrails to keep us in check, to make sure we're going along the right lines. And this morning, I want to talk about this idea of family. Family is one of our core values. And family guides, it influences, it infects, I love that, it infects a lot of what we do as a church. And so here's the point that I want you to walk away with and understand today, and that is this. I am family, so I want to do everything I can to help the family succeed. I am family, so I want to do everything I can to help the family succeed. And this is based on the core value as a church. By the way, you can find them on our website as well, mc3church.org. Click About Us, and the core values are there. And this is the value. It says, God has given parents, not the church, the responsibility of being the spiritual leaders in the home. Therefore, as a church, we value doing everything that we can to help the family succeed. See, as you look in the Bible, as you look through who God has given the responsibility to raise your kids, it's you. It's not us. And I think there's been this, you know, over the years, this idea, well, if I can get my kids to church, then they can make them like God, and then I can just kind of do whatever I feel like. And I don't know why you talk like you're from Louisiana, but apparently you do. But anyway, there's this attitude that says that, and I want you to get it, that it's not true. It is not the church's responsibility to raise or disciple your kids. It is your job to do that. And if you don't know what disciple means, you can listen to our point a couple weeks earlier called I Am a Disciple. And it's all about following Jesus. And so I want to just do a quick overview of this concept that it's not our responsibility to raise your children. It is your responsibility. The first one, and there's going to be a bunch of verses we're going to bounce through here. You do not have to follow along right now. In a few minutes, we'll have one passage we'll look at. But this idea that discipleship is the parent's responsibility, the first one is found in Deuteronomy chapter 6. And this is a passage called the Great Shema. If you are a Jewish person and you went to synagogue today, they would recite this passage before the beginning of synagogue. And it was kind of the big passage that summarizes the Old Testament law. And it's this: Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. And Jesus repeated this later when he was on this earth and said the same thing. And he says, goes on and says, these commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. So love God with everything you've got, And all the law again, this is the Jewish law that Moses is explaining to the Jewish people, says these laws are to be on your hearts. He goes on and says, impress them on your children. Impress them on your children. Take the law, take this idea of loving God with everything that you've got, and make sure your kids get it. He says, talk about them when you sit at home, and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them as on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. The idea is that God is, and he's talking to Old Testament Israel, but as the principle applies to us today, is that we need to teach our kids to love God. And I love how practical Moses gets here. You know, it's like, hey, when you're sitting at home, I'm sure none of you ever sit at home with your kids. And I know that a lot of times we're very busy with kids. So he says, okay, well, how about when you're going along the road? We do have a lot of car time. How about when you go lie down, when you go to bed? Everybody goes to bed at night, mostly. Most of the people get up the next morning. Some people don't. Other people just wake up dead. But anyway, that doesn't work. But anyway, he says, then tie them on symbols. Like, keep them in front of you. Keep these in front of you because it is your job as parents to teach, to raise, to disciple your children. So that's the Old Testament, that's the law. And you'd be like, oh, well, I'm not Israel, I'm not Jewish, so it doesn't apply to me. Fine. Okay, let's look at the New Testament. This is in Ephesians chapter 6. And it says fathers, and the Greek word here is a word that refers to fathers or parents. So don't be like, oh, well, I'm not a man, so this doesn't apply to me. And again, you're talking like you're Louisiana, and again, so maybe you're a woman. Say, I'm not a man, so this doesn't apply to me. The word means parents, those that are in charge. We could use the modern word guardian, you know, the guardian of your children. Do not provoke your children to anger. You know, don't make your kids mad, and we don't have time to get into what that means. But Paul goes on and says, but raise them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. He says, it is your job, parents, fathers, to raise your kids in the discipline and instruction of the Lord, to raise your kids to love Jesus. That's your job. He doesn't say anywhere in there, church, Sunday school teachers, small group leaders. It says, parents, it is your job to raise your kids in the instruction, discipline and the instruction of the Lord. And for those of you that are children here, which I guess in some sense we all are, but this is the next passage Colossians. In Colossians chapter 3, this is the part that the parents like, where Paul starts out and says, children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. And then kind of repeats the same idea, fathers, parents, do not embitter your children, or they will become discouraged. And the idea here is that not only is it important for parents to raise their children and to teach them and to disciple them, it's important for kids to get it, because it's a good thing. So Paul talks about both sides here. The Bible talks about both sides. Your responsibility as parents, their responsibility as kids, because that is the way God designed it. God did not set it up for the church to be the ones to raise your kids. It's not our responsibility. And if that's offensive, fine. Because when it comes down to it, God is not going to hold your volunteer for 1 hour a month ignition worker responsible for how your kid grew up to love or to not love Jesus. You can point fingers all you want, but the responsibility, the accountability lies with the parents. That's our job. That's our responsibility. That's the way God set it up. So this idea of I am family, so I want to do everything I can to help the family succeed. This is where we come in as a church. Because it's a parent's responsibility. I am a parent. I have four children. It is my responsibility to disciple my children, to raise them to love Jesus. And sometimes I am really good at that. And sometimes I'm not. And there's a lot of nodding going on right now from my children that are in the room, at least internally. But the idea is, like, it's our responsibility as parents. And so as a church, where do we fit in? If the idea is to drop your kids off so that they can get some Jesus in them, then here's where we come in. Our job as a church, where MC3 comes in, is we want to come alongside you as parents. We are your teammates. We are your partners. We want to do everything that we can to help you succeed in doing the job that God has called you to do. And that's kind of the idea. That's the whole point behind our MC3 family concept. is that we are not the ones responsible, you are. So we're doing everything we can to help you. Now, can I just be straight with you? Some of you are not very good at taking advantage of this. Some of you are still thinking, well, that doesn't really matter, and it's not a big deal. And that's fine, because they're not going to hold Sean accountable for your kids. They're not going to hold MC3 family or anybody. You're going to be held accountable for your kids. But there are a number of resources, a number of opportunities for you to take advantage of. And if you don't, yes, it's my idea, it's our plans, it's our church thing, but you're missing out. You're missing out on something that frankly, most churches don't offer. A couple of things, what do we have here? Yeah, Ignition. There we go. First of all, right now, if your kids are in kindergarten, actually preschool, but kindergarten through fifth grade, they are upstairs being taught the importance of family. They are being taught this point, I am family, so I want to do everything I can to help the family succeed. They're being taught the exact same thing that you are. Because we thought it would be a lot of fun for us to spend hours and hours, hundreds of hours a month, with all the man hours involved, to put together a teaching curriculum for 4 hours a week or a month. We thought, let's spend hundreds of hours so we can come up with 4 hours. It's not even 4 hours, actually. We're looking at like 45 minutes. The reason we do that is because we want to give you tools. We want you to be able to get into your car when you're walking along the road, when you're riding along the road, and be able to say, what did you learn about today in Ignition? And I say, well, we learned this passage in 1 Timothy. And again, I'm not bashing other churches, but in a standard church model, you might go, oh, I've never even knew that Timothy wrote a book. Depending on your background. Or you might like, oh, I don't know what that passage is. Well, we learned about John chapter 7. But let's go home to our small group where we learn about Matthew chapter 4. And this whole idea of everybody doing their own thing. And you get in the car and you don't know how to dialogue. And so we're setting this up so you can say, oh, I know 1 Timothy 4:12. As a matter of fact, I'm an expert on it. Just had 1 hour's worth of training on how to teach that passage. Because you need to have the conversations with your kids. And as Kirk said earlier, you know, the parents, and this is an illustration we've talked about before. As parents, you have something like, I forget the number, and we're going to an Orange conference this coming week, some of the MC3 family team. But there's this idea of basically a healthy church. If your kids showed up every time they could, nobody ever took vacation, nobody ever got sick, we would have about 40 hours a year. Do you remember these numbers, Seth? What's the other one? It's like 2,000 or 4,000. It's some insane number that the average parent, even with kids in sports and school and aren't even spending much time together, the average parent has about 4,000 or 3,000 or 2,000 hours a year with their kids. And I don't know what that number. Anybody? No, nobody in the room? Okay, they're all actually serving upstairs doing their job, so that's cool. But the idea is that you're with your kids all the time, and so we want to help you succeed. So that's why we have Ignition. We have a YouTube channel. Every other week upstairs, the kids are learning from a live teacher. Today's a live teacher. Hey, Amy! She probably can hear us right now. Amy is teaching live. And the opposite weeks, there's a video. And it has Greg and Wilson and Muffy and Tina, I got them all, teaching the point. And that video is available on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/MC3Church. We put that there because we're hoping you'll click on the ads and we'll become rich. Actually, no, that's not the truth. We put that there so that you have a resource. So you can say, hey, kids, what did you learn this week? Well, we learned this thing. Greg and Wilson, we're doing this. And you can watch the video with your kids, without them, and talk about it. And dialogue, and disciple your children. Other things we have is All Tuned Up. Right after the worship experience this morning, the first Sunday of every month, except for the summer, we have All Tuned Up. And what do we do here? I know Steph and Justin are like, we are so bored with our kids and our jobs and our other church responsibilities. We're like, can we just invest like, I don't know, 50 hours a month into something? And that's exactly what they were thinking. I'm like, well, I don't know. I guess. No, and that's not true either. I think the sarcasm thing, is that sarcasm? Or the point is, they invest hours and hours and hours a month to put on a program for your kids and you to come and be a part of so that you can learn. Here's where we're going the next month. We've got nothing to hide. This week we're talking about family. Next week we're talking about change. The following week we're talking about authenticity and being real. And the week after that we're talking about God. glorifying God. Yes, that's what we're talking about. I put this together. Anyway, but they're here to communicate that to you so you know where we're going. So in a couple of weeks when they're talking about, yeah, we learned about being real, you can say, I know what that was about. I remember that skit. Hey, kids, let's talk about what it means to be authentic, what it means to be grace-filled, what it means to accept people. And so we do that. They do that for you. So take advantage of that. We provide food, so there's no excuses. You can't get home. And if you eat right away, you're usually able to get home by kickoff. So just for what it's worth. So that's another thing we do. Another thing we have is the ATU PACs. ATU, all tuned up. P-A-K, parents and kids. This is a pack that we give you for you to take home, to do an activity every week with your family so that you can together, again, discuss the point for the week because we're hitting it over and over and over again. And that is, I got to tell you, that's probably one of the best tools that we have. And it's kind of one of the coolest tools and scary in some sense because it's the only thing where we say, go. There is no teacher. There is no pastor. There is no ignition worker. There's no one there to guide you. You have the pack so that you can guide your children. And we have tons of them available afterwards. You'll get one for this next month. Take them home. Take advantage of them. One of the things we're incorporating, because we want you to do this, is we're going to be adding them into prime groups once a month as well, so that you as a whole family in your whole prime group can do the pack together and discuss with your kids the point. So there are a lot of fun activities in there. I mean, there's different things. We did this past month, there was you had to go through the Bible and find words, and then, you know, it talked about, I don't even remember, like, take up your bed and walk. So you read the passage, and then somewhere in your house, there was a prize that you as a parent hid for your kids, and it was near the bed. And there was another one that talked about the living water, and so you hid a prize near the water. And I might be totally wrong because Kara's leaning over to John. But it was something cool like that. I forget. It was a long time ago. But the idea is that you can do that together. And so those things are there for you. And this isn't even what I'm talking about today. I just want you to know. This is just the intro. But the idea is it's your responsibility. And because it's your responsibility, we love you. We love you as parents. And dude, there's way more of them upstairs than there are of you right here, just so you know. Like, if they wanted to take over, they could. So we have to keep them in check, okay? No. but we want to come alongside you. We are your advocate. We are your buddy. We are your friend. We are here to help you do what you do and so that you can do it better than you've ever done it before. And that is why this is our core value. In a few minutes, I'm going to talk about MC3 Student, which we're launching next week. And we're excited about that. That is for students in 6th through 12th grade. And I'm going to take some time to talk about that this morning. And it's the same concept because we're coming alongside you as parents. And I want you to know, if you're excited about this announcement, you're like, ooh, youth group. Sorry, no. It's not going to be youth group because it's going to be very different from that. It's a very on-purpose, intentional way to come alongside students and parents together. So that is the idea. I am family. I want to do everything I can to help the family succeed. Now, I have talked about this concept multiple times before. And so if you want to go back to if you click on the MC3 family page, I'm pretty sure you can listen to the point from our I Heart My Church series last year. You can also find it under I Heart My Church, but I Heart Family. And that's an hour long version of what I just did in 20 minutes. But I want to do something different today. We've looked at this idea of how it's important to come alongside parents. And I want to flip this around a little bit. I want to look at this family idea from another end of the spectrum, kind of the opposite side of things. And that's this idea, okay, as parents is important, but what's the role of kids? How do kids fit into church? And I mean kids by, like, if you're a parent and you have kids. So I'm not looking at, like, oh, because it's not an age thing. I'm just saying those younger than adults. So there. But how do they fit in? And I want to look at this passage. So if you do have a Bible, you can open it. If you have paper there, to 1 Timothy chapter 4, or just YouVersion app, tap on 1 Timothy chapter 4. It's in the New Testament. 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12. And 1 Timothy was, if you were here for our Word, the sequel series a couple months ago, 1 Timothy was a letter that Paul wrote to Timothy. Timothy was a young, new pastor. And he was probably like in his 30s, and he had just planted a church. Crazy place to be. But I'm in my 30s. So, and I plant. Okay. Tough crowd. Thanks. Yeah, all right. Like, I didn't know if people were like, wow, are you that young? Or are you that old? Anyway, so it was, and the these three, he wrote two letters to Timothy and a letter to Titus. These were all to pastors. And this particular letter we talked about, the point was teaching leadership. And so Paul was teaching Timothy about leadership. And in this particular passage, in verse 12 of chapter 4, Paul says to Timothy, "Don't let anyone look down on you because you are young, but set an example for the believers in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, and in purity." So here's Timothy, a young new pastor at a church, planting a church in this area where, you know, the church, not just his church was new, but the church was a brand new thing, less than 100 years old at that point, around the world. And so Timothy is this young guy, and Paul says, look, don't let anyone look down on you because you're young. Because I think we all know, now granted, in this room, the average age, I'll tell you it looks a little different, but typically the average age in this room is probably 25. And according to our Facebook page, how many people are looking and liking our posts, it's like 26. The average age of MC3, we're a young church. And as a young church, as young people, there's an impression, right? We know what the impression is about young people. And just so you know, if you're 25, there's always someone younger. Oh, those young people, those teenagers, kids these days. But the idea is that, you know, no matter where you are in life, you're probably in some circle looked upon as young. And I would say as a church, MC3 is probably looked at as a young church. And then they're like, oh, I knew it. They painted that building black. If you haven't seen the front of the building now, it's been repainted this week. But the idea is there's a stereotype out there about young people. And I want to kind of blow through this stereotype. And I think that's what Paul is telling Timothy. He says, don't let anybody look down on you because you're young. And here's the difference, right? If your response to someone looking down on you because you're young, and because we're young, I mean, I'm in my 30s. That's young to some people. My daughter, anyway, we were talking about a movie that was from 2006. She's like, that was really old, wasn't it? Anyway, he says, don't just be obnoxious and get through the stereotype. Like, shut up. You don't know. You're stupid and old anyway. That's exactly what Paul meant for Timothy to do. He says, don't let anyone look down on because you're young, but tell them to shut up and that they're stupid and old. That's exactly what you should do. So remember that. If someone says that you're young, Paul says, just say, shut up, you're stupid and you're old. That is not what he said. He said, look, don't let anyone look down on you're young. Here's how you deal with that. Here's how you fight the stereotype. He says, set an example. And that just doesn't mean for younger people, but for people older. Set an example for all the believers in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, and in purity. So I want to look at this. What does this look like? So let's look at this idea of being young. And I want all of you in this room, whether you have a full, thick head of youthful hair or none at all, whether your hair is perfectly originally the same color from birth or whether it's gray and silver, wherever you find yourself, I want this to be you. I want you to think through this from your eyes, okay? We'll talk about looking at through other eyes in a second. But right now, let's look at it from your eyes. If you, as a young person, there's some things that we need to do when it comes to breaking this stereotype. So let's break the stereotype. And this is how Paul says to do it. The first thing he says, we can break the stereotype by what we say. By what we say. He says, if people are looking down on you, And if they're looking down on you because you're rude, then stop being rude. If they're looking down on you because you're obnoxious, then don't be obnoxious. If they're looking down on you because you keep stealing things from them, fix that. But if people are purely looking at you because you're young, Paul says, break the stereotype. And the first way we can break the stereotype is by what we say. And so my question to you, I don't have time to get into all of what this word means, but it means what you say in your speech, the words that come out of your mouth. He says, set an example for the believers in speech. What words come out of your mouth? Do your words lift people up? Or do they tear people down? Are you known as a person like, yeah, they're encouraging? Or, wow, don't get on their bad side because they will bite your head off. And I was going to say this a couple weeks ago, too. I mean, I don't care what you think about yourself. Oh, I think I'm pretty good at what do others think about you? Because that's probably more real than how we see ourselves. And so what about your speech? Does what you say lift people up or tear them down? Do they draw people, do your words draw people closer to Jesus because that is the goal? Or do they push people away? And I'm not even referring to like, you know, oh, I hate you, you're a loser. I mean, yeah, that's not a nice thing to say. But even in the stuff that you talk about, like if someone's listening into your conversation, do they go, oh, I might want to check that movie out. Or I might want to go to that place or hang out with those people. And would that lead them closer to Jesus or further away? How are we in our speech? What we say? Are we you know, setting an example? Because if you want people to say, oh, wow, I mean, I don't think age is as much of an issue anymore these days. I really don't. Because people see and know, like, wow, that person is they're a godly person. The things they say are encouraging. And I don't think they're going to like, oh, yeah, I know what you're saying is encouraging, but you're young, so you're stupid. If we set that example in what we say, it will make a difference. Is your language something worth repeating? And again, I'm not here to be like, here's all the rules about how you should love Jesus and say that word now. Or, oh, that word's not on the books. You can't say that one. Oh, this one's okay on TV now, so you can say that one. I don't care about that. I'm saying in your heart, are the things you're saying, would you want a four-year-old repeating it? So that's one way we can break the stereotype, is by what we say. Second way we can break the stereotype is by how we live. And he says, set an example for the believers in speech, in conduct, in how you conduct yourself, and how you live your life. The way you live your life, do you conduct yourself in a way that makes people think about Jesus? Or do you conduct yourself in a way that draws people away? What does your life look like? Can people see Jesus in how you live? Let me ask you this, right? I hope you have steel-toed boots on. Can people see Jesus in how you live, right? And I mean how you live every day, day in and day out. Not that you're perfect, and we'll talk about that in a couple weeks. That's what the beauty of grace. God says, hey, I love you no matter what you do, and I forgive you. But the way you live, is that a way that draws people to Jesus? Or do they see that you love Jesus because you post something on Facebook about prayer and you've got an MC3 bumper sticker? Like, do we feel that is living for Jesus? Like, bad attitude, bad mouth, bad choices, but click like if you want Jesus to give you a hug. I'm good. Do you know what I mean? Because living means living. And people see fake. And frankly, stop being fake. We talked about the speck in your own eye and the plank in your own eye and the speck in someone else's eye last week about the hypocrisy. Like, stop. Don't fake it. You're ruining it for the rest of us. Just say, you know what, I'm not into the Jesus thing. I don't love God. And take your magnet off your car, please. Change your Facebook profile picture. Because people are interested and they can see how you are living. And if we are being an example to others, it's got to be not just in the things we can say and the cliches and the nice T-shirts that we wear and whatever, but in how we live. And I guess the answer to that question, too, comes down to, is Jesus affecting the way you live? And that's why, you know, one of the things we've talked about as a church and as elders, as leaders, is that, you know, we have very few policies. And lots of conversations. We totally stole that from Andy Stanley. But this idea, we don't have a lot of rules. Now, there are some policies in place, safety policies, security issues, things like that. But we want to have conversations because we realize life is hard and life is messy. But so we don't have all these rules of you need to do this, you need to dress this way, you need to act this way. I mean, I was just talking with the elders. Of course, in a couple of weeks, Kendra and I are going to the Forward Edge Banquet in Portland, and maybe I shared this with you last week. If I did, just smile like you never heard it before, okay? But I love when people are like, I say, well, what should I wear to this banquet? And they say, oh, well, just wear what you wear to church on Sunday. I'm like, I don't think you want me to wear what I wear to church on Sunday to your formal banquet. I'm actually wearing pants today, so I'm up in the level. I mean, not that I don't wear pants. Woo-wee! I'm not wearing shorts, and anyway, for some reason, shorts are... Anyway. But anyway, the deal is this. It's not an issue of rules and laws and regulations, and you need to do this, dress this way, act this way, to love Jesus. But the issue is letting Jesus change you from the inside out, and that should affect the way you live. That should affect how people see you and how you interact with other people. Your conduct should be changed by Jesus. And if you think that it doesn't matter how you live, I just challenge you that you're wrong. People see it. People know it. So let's live that way. Set an example by the way we live, by our conduct, by how we are carrying ourselves. Letting people know that there is something different about you. Yeah, you're not all cleaned up. You're not perfect. But there's something different. And that is what Jesus does in our lives. And that's what Paul is talking about to Timothy. Set an example for how you live. Live the right way. It's not about rules and laws. It's about letting Jesus affect you from the inside out. And he goes on. He says, break the stereotype by what we say, how we live. The question I have for you is, do we love? The third thing is, do we love? Do you love people? And I'm not talking about your kids. Yes, I love my kids. I'm not talking about your spouse, which you better love your spouse. But I am talking about how you love your kids and how you love your spouse. What does love look like to you? Is it the unconditional love that says, you messed up royally and I still love you? Is it a selfless love that says, I'm loving you even if it's inconvenient for me? Inconvenient for me. Does your love have strings attached to it? In a couple days. Hey, baby. I tell you, you look really nice today, honey. I love you. Sweetheart. Oh, you want something. Oh, okay. Like, is that the way your love works? Paul says, set an example for the believers in speech and conduct in love, in agape, in unconditional love, a love that says there's no strings attached to how I love you, a love that says I am willing to do whatever it takes. And these are the people I'm talking about that we like. Right? Hopefully you like your spouse. Hopefully you like your kids. It's easy to love the people that we like, but Jesus talks about loving people that we don't even like. People that aren't like us. People that don't fit in our circles. Can you love people that hate you? Because that is how we set an example. When everybody else is trash-talking the them, there's always a them. It's that person that nobody else likes at work. It's that person that doesn't vote the way you vote. It's that person that acts that way or has that kind of family or drives that vehicle. And everybody else talks about them. Well, we know them. But are you the one that says, you know, just love them. It's okay. I don't mean you're all like goody-two-shoes, like, oh, I'm going to come in here and act all snooty and smart because I have an IMMC3 sticker on my Facebook profile. And, I really think Jesus wants us to love these people. I mean, you could probably say that same thing maybe in a little better way without the stupid voice. But the idea is, how do we love? Do we love people? Do we love people the way Jesus told us to love people? So set an example. We can break the stereotype by what we say, by how we live. Do we love? The next question is, by how we trust. Can we trust? And let me just say one thing about love. Let me back up a little bit. Next month, we're doing a series called Hosea. It's complicated. And this whole series is all about God's love for us, his unrelenting love for us. And he demonstrates it through Hosea. And if you want to have some fun and be like, he's going to teach that? Read Hosea ahead of time. It'll just be awesome. Honestly, just take the first three chapters, and then you can just be waiting to figure out what in the world we're going to teach adults and kids about Hosea. And so if you don't know what I'm talking, I'm just saying, just read it. But anyway, so this idea of can we trust? If we're setting an example, is your life demonstrating faith in Jesus? And I don't mean I'm a Christian. I don't mean I have been baptized, which are all good. I don't mean that I'm following Jesus. I'm saying, do you have faith? Do you trust God really? Do you trust God when it counts? Do you trust God when it seems like there is nothing else that can go possibly wrong in this day, but still be able to sing sovereign in the words of his song? I don't know. God being sovereign, no matter what comes my way, I will trust you. Can you sing that? Because God is sovereign, God is in control, and Paul tells Timothy that you need to set an example in your speech, in your conduct, in your love, in faith, in how you trust God, in the way you trust Him. When you get a message midweek finding out that none of the sound guys are going to be in town on probably the most insane day when we've got all these extra musicians, we've got an all tuned up happening, and all sorts of other crazy going on, what is your response? Is your response, stupid sound guys, how dare they care about their children's education going off to visit a college? Stupid sound guys, how dare they take a family vacation they've been planning for 4 months, 4 years, and it just happened they were all switching with each other and came to find out that the week that they were all switching for was today. And I got to tell you, that was my first response. But then I stepped back and said, you know what, God, you've got this. I'm pretty sure that even if nothing worked out with the sound, people would still love you, and you'd still be in control. But how is your response? Like, that's not my response all the time. But Paul says, if we want to be an example, if we want to break the stereotype, we're going to say, yeah. And I'm not talking about being fake and cheesy, but yeah, this is really hard, but God's going to get me through this. Yeah, I know this just happened. I know there was loss, but God's going to work it out. I know we just found out about that diagnosis, and I'm not being fake. I'm saying it hurts. I'm saying I don't understand why, but I still trust that God loves me unconditionally. And He has a plan. He's got a plan for me. And it might not even be the perfect plan in my mind, but it is in His mind. And that's what Paul says to Timothy. He says, you want to set an example? You want to break the stereotype? Be a person of faith. Don't let your circumstances freak you out. Be the first person when people are like, what are we going to do? There's not enough money. To say, I don't know, but God's going to provide for it. And I could just share stories. I mean, even this week, there was a personal situation in our life. And Kendra got a letter just yesterday. We were like, we can't handle this right now. There's a financial issue. And we got a letter saying, like, to the dollar, saying, here, you're going to have some money. And it's a long, complicated story. But God came through to the dollar for our need. And like, that's not because I'm great or I deserve it. It's because God is great. And so when it comes to setting an example, can you set an example for other people in your faith? Do they look at you and see you as a person that truly trusts God? Or is your faith more in yourself and your circumstances? Well, if I have enough saved in the bank, then I'll be okay. And you have a loose affiliation with Jesus. Well, as long as I have my retirement plan, or as long as I have this job lined up, or I have, you know, once I can get to this benchmark, then I'll be okay. I got to say, those are all good things. It's all good to be stewards of everything, and I'm not mocking that at all. But there is a point where our faith becomes a faith in ourselves and not in God. I'm not saying be stupid. But when things don't line up, when things don't make sense, where do you rely? Do you say, oh, I need to do more. I need to do more. I need to do more. Or do you say, God, help me? Because one is faith in God, and one is, I guess, faith in your own effort. So that's how we set an example. And then the last thing is, so what? What we say, how we live, do we love, can we trust, and are we pure? Paul says to set an example in all these things, speech, conduct, love, faith, and in purity. Is your life marked by purity? And I'm not just talking about sexual purity, which is a part of this, but purity. Something that is pure is not tainted. And sin is what taints our lives. And this is a big deal to God. And here's why it's a big deal to God. One, it nailed His Son to the cross. Your sin, your little, like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. We talked about that last week, your little pet sins. These are all bad, but this one's okay. Yeah, sit, good boy. And we think those are okay. And our sins nailed Jesus to a cross. He died for us. He wanted to. He loves us. But He suffered because of our sins. And the deal with sin is not only that, but God says, here's what I want for you. And it doesn't involve sin. It's my plan. It's a good plan. It's because I love you and I want the best for you. And we go, no, you don't. I'm going to do it my way. And that is what sin is. That is what impurity is. It's saying God's got this perfect, holy, good thing for us, and we have tainted it by allowing our own emotions, by allowing our own choices, by allowing our own desires to affect that. And Paul is telling Timothy, look, if you want to set an example, you need to set it by purity. And I'll tell you what, we're in a world where purity stands out like crazy now. You want to be an example? Be pure. And I mean in everything. Be pure in how you talk. I mean, you could put that into all these things. Be pure in your conduct. Be pure in your love and your faith. Because sin is ugly. And we're going to talk about, again, when we get to this Hosea series, I mean, honestly, I'm praying that God rips our hearts out as we go through this, as we look at how awful sin is and how much he loves us. Because that is the story of Hosea. So, what are you known as? We looked at sin, no big deal, or do you see it as a big deal? And of course, God's grace covers that. God forgives us. He's not okay with our sin, but he says, I love you anyway. And we'll talk about that in a couple more weeks here when we look at authenticity, being real, and grace. So, that's what it looks like to be young. If we're young, if we see ourselves as a young person, and no matter where you are, you know, you can break this stereotype by what you say, how we live, do we love, can we trust, and are we pure? That's what Paul says. Set an example for the believers in these 5 things. Set an example for the believers in these 5 things. That is exactly how we can break the stereotype. So that's when it comes to us. Now I want to talk a little bit about how do we see other people? How do we see those younger than us? We are the church. And how do you see others that are younger than you in the church? The idea here is as you see those that are young. When it comes to the next generation, okay, and Kirk prayed about this already a little bit. He saw my notes, stole them, totally hacked my internet this morning at 6 a.m. and stole them because that's all who Kirk is. He's got that kind of talent. He is totally a hacker. I think he knows which button turns his phone on. I think. Although sometimes he doesn't know which button turns it off because he's dialed me from, well, his butt. Anyway, moving forward. Anyway, the idea of, like, how do we see those that are younger than us? How do we see the next generation? How do you see it? As the church, I think this is one of the issues that we have to address when it comes to being family, when it comes to setting an example, but also saying, as the next generation, how do we view you? How do we see them? And it comes back to this passage about not letting anyone look down on you because you're young, that we need to do the same thing for the next generation. I think one of the things that I've heard in churches over my years in churches is, just, well, once you get old enough, then you can Once you are old enough, then. And I want you to understand something, and I'm trickling into my outline here, but there's no when you get older. The church is the church now. If you're a follower of Jesus, you are a part of the church now. Whether you started following Jesus at 35, 95, or 5, you're all part of the church. There is no church of the future. There's the church of now. So I want to look at this. When it comes to us, and I'm saying this because this is a little bit extraordinary when it comes to how churches do youth ministry, student ministry, youth group, how we do a lot of things. But this idea of seeing the young, seeing the next generation. And the first thing is the next generation needs us to do some things. The first thing the next generation needs us to do is to appreciate them. And I don't mean just pat them on the back, say good job, which is good, that's nice. But I'm saying recognize, appreciate the fact that if they are a follower of Jesus, they are a part of the church right now. And we're not going to set up a church that says when you get old enough, then you can be involved. Because that is making some sort of rule that is not biblical that says there's something about your age that makes you better. And I want to encourage you that there isn't. There are standards in the Word of God in terms of elders and leadership that have nothing to do with your age, but do talk about your relationship with Jesus. And if we're going to set any standards about anybody, if, which we do with our elders, and those in key leadership positions, but otherwise, let's let God's grace work. But if these standards are based on age, then we've totally missed the boat. Because it's not an issue of age. It's about being an example, as Paul just told Timothy to do. We need to appreciate the next generation. We need to understand they are the church today, not the church later. So, that's one thing. The second thing we need to do is we need to empower them. We need to say, because you're not the church later, we want you to serve in the church now. This morning, and I don't know if you picked up on this because we were standing, but there were one, two, three, four. Did I miss anybody? Four students, young students, that were leading worship with the band this morning. Nobody came up front and said, and now we're going to have the kids sing a quaint little song. Get out your cameras. That was totally on purpose because they were leading us in worship. And some of you didn't even know the difference. And that's exactly what we want. Because we want them to be a part of what we do now. If I had asked this about 20, 30, 40, 50 minutes ago, you would have seen a number of young people wearing green Ignition shirts because they're upstairs serving right now. We didn't say, wait till you get older. Wait till you're old, 21 or 18. Serve now. And I think it's really important that as a church, we empower the next generation. We give them the chance to lead. We give them the chance to serve. We don't say wait till later or, well, that's for youth band. You'll probably see some of these musicians playing here in the future. You're going to see some more students involved in ATU in a few moments. Because the church isn't the church later. The church is the church now. And we want to empower them. We want to give them the means to do what it is that God has gifted them to do. And there's gifting. There's all these things tied together. Don't get me wrong. We're not just throwing somebody up front. Good luck. Hope you don't drown. But if we're saying that age is the line, then we've missed some things in the Bible. So we appreciate them. We empower them. One of the cool things about this, right? And I'll throw this out there too. One of the cool things about letting younger people serve in your ministries and serve in our worship bands and serve in Ignition and serve in the different areas that we have, it keeps us from getting old. Because you know how you can get irrelevant really fast? Keep the same people doing the same thing and don't add anybody new. And in about 10 years, MC3 will be totally irrelevant. I guarantee it. But, well, this is the cool young church. It won't be in 10 years. It won't be the cool middle-aged church. And in 20 years, we'll be the dead old church. And in 40 years, I remember when that church was cool. I remember when they were relevant. And I don't mean cool because, ooh, we were cool. But, like, I remember when they were making a difference. And one of the best ways to keep that from happening is to keep letting new life, new blood come in and be involved. And Kirk said this, and this is exactly in my notes here, but there will be a time when we need to get out of the way as the older generation. But I'm only 22. Yep, there's going to be a time when you need to get out of the way. Can I be straight? I don't want to freak you out. I don't want you setting dates or anything like that. But when I'm 50, I want to have a plan for how I'm moving out of this role. And that's not because I hate my job, but because we need to let new life and new leadership step in. And maybe I'm not here in 50, you know, when I'm 50, that's like 15 years or so. But if I'm still doing the same thing at 70, I just have questions about that. You should have questions about that. Because we need to empower the next generation. So again, don't like set your clock, okay, today is 2014, so he's going to be gone by then. Yes! And then the third thing we need to do is the next generation needs us to be an example for them. This doesn't grammatically work, but I don't care. They need us to be an example for them. And that's what Paul was talking about setting an example. This idea of speech and life and love and faith and impurity. We need to set a good example for the next generation. And that good example means all sorts of things. It means saying, yes, we appreciate you and we are letting you serve. We want you to serve. Not letting you. We're wanting you to serve because we're brothers and sisters in Christ. My daughter is my sister in Christ. And I know that's really weird, but it's true. My sons are my brothers in Christ. And they are my children. They're my boys. They're my sons. Because do you get it? They're all, if they're followers of Jesus, then we're all part of the same team. So we need to be an example for them. I'll just say this. There are some young people that are showing you up. They are setting the example as a young person and saying, I'm going to be an example in my speech, in my faith, in my life, my love, speech, life, love, faith, and impurity. And some of us need to get on the ball and say, I'm going to be an example too. So we need to be an example for them. And I just ask you this, like, what does the next generation think about you? What do they think about you? Not what do you think about you, but what do they think about you? Are you known as the cool person? You're the funny person? The old person? Or are you known as a person that draws people closer to Jesus? Because that's the only answer. Those other things aren't bad, but that's the one that really matters. Do people know, yeah, they love Jesus, and I want to look up to them. I want them to be my example. So that's how we need to look at the next generation, is not only be an example in speech, in life, in love, in what we say, how we live, do we love, can we trust, are we pure, but also to appreciate them and to respect and recognize that they're part of the body of Christ today, to empower them and to be an example for them. So I want to take the next 5 minutes and talk to you about what we are going to be doing with MC3 Student. We will be launching MC3 Student to the day, 3 years after MC3 began. And we said it was coming, and it has been. Just took 3 years to get to it. Because we want to do things and we want to do them well, and I'm not making excuses, but I am saying, you know, we didn't want to force something until we were ready. And so we're at this point getting ready to launch a student ministry for 6th through 12th grade students. And, one of the things you hear and thrown around a lot here is MC3 is like nothing you'd expect. And that's the truth. That's the same thing with our student ministry. It is not going to be what you think of a youth group, a place where you can send your kids, drop them off, and they can have a little bit of fun. It's kind of babysitting, but that's okay. Get them babysat for a few hours while mom and dad go out and then come back and, you know, whatever. It's not going to be that. This is going to be something designed as part of MC3, as part of our C3 process, and incorporating them as the body of Christ, as the church, in the church. So, here's a statement from Reggie Joyner, who wrote the book Think Orange. And Think Orange is the idea of bringing the church and family together. It's kind of the foundational concept for MC3 Family and MC3 Student. And again, in a couple of days, don't forget, by the way, if you're signed up, if you're part of the team, we're heading over down to Lancaster on Tuesday to go to the Orange Conference for a day. But anyway, Reggie Joyner said this. He said, from the time students hit middle school, they start moving away from home. They're not doing anything wrong. It's just the way they're made. And we talked about this a couple months ago in our Start Cheating series. Your job as a parent is to get rid of them. Get them out. Move them on. Give them the tools that they need to leave. They're not doing anything wrong. It's just the way they're made. They're becoming independent, and they begin redefining themselves through the eyes of other people. There's a word missing there. Through the eyes of other people who are not their immediate family. So they're getting ready to move away, and they start seeing themselves outside of their immediate family. So the older they get, and listen to this, the more important it is to have other voices in their lives saying the same things, but in a different way. MC3 Student is designed to come alongside parents raising students. And by the way, you won't hear me use the word teens, because I just hate that word, and it's always used in a negative way. Oh, those teens. So I'm not going to say teens. I'll call them students. If you don't like that word, I don't care. But come alongside the parents and say, we want to help you raise your student who happens to be of the teenage years. So you got it? And the issue is the idea of being a second voice. And so we're developing a program here that's going to launch October 16th. It's going to be a Tuesday, and mostly it's built around Student Prime. And the goal is eventually to have multiple Student Prime groups. Right now we're starting with one, and they will multiply as the group grows, as the leadership grows. But the idea is that there is going to be a Student Prime group leader that is responsible for your student. That they're going to be the ones that intentionally are developing the relationships and building the relationship with your student. So let's say your kid's name is Joseph, and Bob is going to be Joseph's Student Prime leader, MC3 student leader. And they're going to be working with Joseph. Bob's going to be working with Joseph regularly. Hey, Joseph, how's it going? How are things going this week? Oh, hey, how's last week? You know, they're developing a relationship there. And the idea is that Bob is going to be talking with mom and dad about how Joseph is doing. And I'm not saying, like, spy on them. This will be totally open. But that they are the second voice in their life saying the same thing. And the revolutionary concept, one of the cool things here that we're doing, is what we're calling Parent Connect. Now, if you've been to ATU, All Tuned Up, you know it's sort of a way that MC3 Family Team explains, here's where we're going the next month. Well, Parent Connect is probably going to be every other month, but it's going to be the same concept. The MC3 student leaders are going to be sharing, and Bill and Carla Cooper are the coordinators for that. They will be sharing with the parents, and we don't know when this is going to happen yet. We'll give you details as we start filtering out the schedule. But they'll be saying, here's where we're going these next couple months. Here's what we're going to be talking about. And they're going to be sharing maybe, you know, it's not going to have the song and dance like ATU. Think of it like ATU meets a parent-teacher conference. But they're going to say, here's where we're going this next month. Here's the things we're going to be talking about. And they're going to say, and here's how it's going to kind of relate to you and your student. It might be a little bit different. And so they're just going to be very straightforward. Here's what's going to be said. Here's the point we're talking about. Here's some of the discussion issues that we're looking at. Then the rest of that time is going to be a connection between the parents and their student leaders. And so the idea is then for the rest of that, you know, whatever, two-hour time, so maybe 20 minutes at the beginning, and then another hour and 40 minutes, Bob, who is Joseph's leader, is going to sit down with Joseph's parents and say, hey, how's it going? How is Joseph doing at home? And this might be an opportunity for Joseph's parents to say, you know, he's really been struggling with his attitude towards school. And so Bob, Joseph's leader, can say, you know what, all right, I'll be praying about that for Joseph, and I will help, you know, we'll dialogue about that, and I'll be that second voice in his life. And then Bob can come to their parents the next couple weeks and say, hey, I wanted you to know, we had a great conversation about school, and it turns out there's a bully in his class. Oh, well, Mom and Dad can say, okay, well, then let's address that. And the idea is that this student prime leader is an ally, is on the parent's side in raising their kids. And we're not hiding anything, and we're not going to be like, hey, I'm going to go home and tell your parents about that. But the idea that there's an advocate there, and the same, and it kind of goes the other way too, where Bob can say to Joseph's parents, you know, Joseph, he seems like he's disconnected lately. Is something going on at home? And Joseph's parents might say, yeah, actually, his grandmother isn't doing well. Okay, you know, and that's that relationship there, and we're coming alongside the parents to say the same thing. And I love, hi Amber, I love this story. It's Amber and Danae are both the Snooks. Scott and Michelle's daughter. They're both daughters. Anyway, one of the things that was really cool about them is I was their youth pastor for a number of years, most of their years. And I remember having a conversation with Scott about how, you know, Scott might say, hey, Amber, hey, Danae, it's really important that you always do X. And X is very important. And as teenagers are, as students are, they're like, yeah, okay, whatever, X. All right, whatever, Dad. You know, and then like a couple months later, Danae or Amber would come home to Dad and Mom and be like, man, Pastor Sean talked about doing X and it's so awesome. I am always going to do X. And Scott's like, that's what I've been saying. But that's the idea. I mean, that's just a natural progression with students as they turn into adolescents, as they grow, as they're getting ready to move out. And so we want to come alongside parents and be that second voice. So what we're going to do is we're going to have student prime. It's going to be, now here's the kind of crazy thing, if there's an ATU week, we will not meet, and there's other reasons behind that. I'm not going to take all the time to explain it. But the second, third, and fourth week of the month, there'll be a student prime. Right now, the first student prime is scheduled at the Cooper's home from 6 to 9 p.m. We made it a little bit earlier than most prime groups start that night, a little bit later than most prime groups end, so that you can drop your kids off and go to a prime group, or you can go to a prime group a different night and drop your students off there. And the way it's going to work is the second and fourth week of the month are always going to be discussion tied into the point as we do that. And then the first week of the month is something that we're working on in prime groups as well, where all the prime groups or prime groups will be together with all of their kids and do, like I said, that ATU pack together. So that's the first week of the month. The second and fourth are going to be discussion. And the third week is going to be kind of open for the student prime leaders to figure stuff out. And by the way, you don't have to get all this right now. I hope you're not like, I didn't get all that. Like, I'm just giving an overview. But the idea is just to develop that relationship. So October 16th, which is the second Thursday of the month, the second week of the month, is when it's going to launch. We have a sign-up sheet out there. Right now, all that is so that we can get your information and your students' information, 6th through 12th grade, and then we can pass on the details to you. So we're going to let you know exactly what's happening. That's how it starts, the student prime. Congregation, there is no student worship service because this is the student worship service. One, because we want them to serve and be worshiping together as family, and two, dude, I think they can handle my teaching. I really do. People are like, well, they need to have their own time. Really? am I really that bad? Am I really that dull for a student to be able to handle? I'm not arrogant or cocky. I'm just saying I think they can handle that. So, and then as far as caring, they're going to be involved in the C3 opportunities with the church, maybe with their family, with their parents, or maybe on their own on that third week. But the idea is that they are part of all of those things together. So that is what we're going to be doing. As like I said, Parent Connect will probably come around in like November, once we can get a better feel for the church calendar and how we can fit that in for all the parents. But we're launching MC3 Student in officially it'll be the 16th. But the sign-up information is out there if you're interested for your student. And we will follow up with details. But the cool thing about this, and I'm way over time, I'm so going to get beat up by Michelle, is that this is it. Like, we're done. We're not adding anything else. This will be the end of all the ministries that MC3 will add. Now, we're going to take our time to develop and mature and grow and make them better and better and better. But there's nothing else we're adding to the schedule. And I'm excited about that. Like we talked about last week about being simple. Now, so that's kind of what's going on. So the point is, I am family. I want to do everything I can to help the family succeed. And so right after this, we're going to have all tuned up so that you guys can learn where we're going this next month, have a good time doing it, and be able to raise your children, to disciple your children. Let me pray quickly. Jesus, thank you so much for your word. I thank you that you are the example to us. And I pray that you would help us to be an example to others. And as we look at this idea of being a family, as we look at setting an example for the younger generation, but also helping the younger generation and empowering them to be part of the church, I pray that you'd help us to succeed in this as we seek to do what is biblical, as we seek to follow your word and how we run church, but even as we look at ourselves and our own lives, help us to be the example in speech and life and love and faith and impurity. That people would see us as people that love Jesus, that love you. It's in your name we pray. Amen.